We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Malene Hoff, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Slider. Got him. The Seas were treacherous today, Steve.
And the Seas were angry, my friend.
Oh, my. All right, it's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That was the 11th and final strikeout of Dylan Cease's performance. And, you know, I'll always have happy memories of Doug Eddings, because I remember being at the World Series game.
ALCS.
At the ALCS.
Angels.
Where AJ.
Game two. Yeah.
Where AJ, and I've told you this before, we're all in the stands. All of a sudden, AJ's running to first base, and everybody's like, what the hell happened? He's safe at first. And then Joe Creedy comes up with a big hit. That was a great moment for the White Sox. They win that game. We were so confused. And I've said this, like, as we left, you felt like you were sneaking out. You got away with something quick. The cops are coming. Let's get out of here.
Right.
That's what it felt like. And Doug Eddings was the guy.
He was the umpire. That was the most famous or infamous moment of his career from a White Sox perspective. But I think he probably looks back. That was such a bizarre play and such a big moment. We associate Doug Eddings with that moment in White Sox history.
Glorious moment in White Sox history.
Glorious.
And I always feel good when he's there. And he was at the U.S. Comiscular last night. And high rate, whatever it's called. I'm just being
guaranteed
mean.
Guaranteed great field.
Yeah, I'm just being mean.
I know.
This is umpire auditor on Twitter. A texter told us to check it out. New season high. Umpire Doug Eddings missed a season high 29 calls in the Blue Jays White Sox game for a correct call rate of 86.2%. This included six blown strikeouts.
That's
totally believable.
That's totally believable. Yeah. If you watch the game, you wondered if he was okay. You wondered what was going on. He got into it with people on the Blue Jay bench. I think he might have even thrown somebody out. This was Angel Hernandez bad. This was point where you wonder, okay, what's the hurry? That he could not have had dinner reservations that late. Was the heat getting to him that much? Something was wrong. And it was a great argument for the electronic strike zone.
Grody said on the overnight that he thought he was having a migraine or something. There was something going wrong.
That's not a laughable thing, but
I know
it. Just I'm chuckling at the lengths we'll go to try to find a reason for somebody being that bad at their job, and he was that bad last night at his job. Not that he is obviously, if he's lasted this long, he's consistently good. He's a guy that has been, you know, he has a reputation for being consistent. Last night was not a night that he wants to remember.
And Stoney said at one point, you know, if he's going to call the strike zone that wide, this is going to really work with the slider. And it did. I mean, it did. We went over the numbers. I think Dylan Cease was on it, had his stuff. I don't think that's the reason that he was as good as he was last night, because it didn't hold up when other guys came in. But we had a texter in the first hour of the show who wanted to know if we thought that Doug Eddings was overwhelmed by the heat, so he expanded the strike zone and just wanted to get the hell out of there.
It's a good question.
And it ended up costing him 12 innings.
Well, exactly. Nobody was going anywhere.
Hottest day of the year, David.
4 hours and 23 minutes. The game didn't end until 11:35. If you're a Sox fan, you were rewarded for staying up late to seeing them rally. They came back. They were down 4-2 in the ninth. They were facing the Blue Jays closer, and they came back, and then they came back again. You know, not to be overlooked in all of the the dramatics and heroics. Luis Robert had a couple real big clutch at bats when we talk about the approach. But we'll get to that in a moment. I want to finish this Doug Eddings thought. When our guy Jay Cuda, who we talk about a lot, he's a great Twitter feed. You look at he tweeted something out about the strike zone and then all the called strikes that were represented by orange balls on his tweet. And it's in the 20s. It might have been your number, but all of the called strikes that were outside of the zone, when you see it visually, to the degree that that tweet represents, it's like, what was he looking at? What was wrong with him? Everybody has a bad day at the office. He's entitled. But again, what do you do if you're Major League Baseball and you're seeing this? And we saw the night earlier, Lance Lynn, that start was affected by the fact that he had a breaking pitch that was a strike, and it was called a ball to Guerrero, to Vlad Jr.
Yes.
And it affected the outcome.
Oh, it affects the at-bat completely.
It affects the at-bat. It affects the start. It affects everything about the game. And you know what? His reaction took as long for him to get back on the mound as it would have for it to be reviewed.
Yeah.
And I think that you wonder where this is headed. There's got to be a better way. Too much is at stake for there not to be some sort of technological intervention here, because I think that you see it, whether it's coming, guys. I mean, the pitch clock is coming.
Yes, it's
for
coming.
Real.
Yes, it is.
Why not with the pitch clock? Can you not modernize and have an electronic strike zone, robot umpires, however you want to describe it? There's got to be a better way to measure balls and strikes.
I think it's a fantastic point, and I think it's an important one, because that did impact the game. And now it was both teams. It wasn't like one team or the other. But, you know, we talked to open the show about the Sox in those black uniforms and how great it is, but is it good in the hottest day of the year? The umpire's wearing pretty dark clothes.
They do.
I mean, I was just saying, maybe he literally melted down himself.
Maybe umps should wear white. Would that be better?
Well, it sounds like cricket or...
But not until after Memorial Day.
They should wear those... Did you ever see that... What is that? Australian rules rugby, whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
Australian rules football, where the guy wears the long white coat. And what do you think?
I don't know about that. It looks like they're coming out of the lab.
Yeah, exactly. Dustin just did it. I was sitting here doing it. What is that sport called? I've been to a match. And
Aussie rules football.
Yeah, Aussie rules Australian football. Rules football.
I only ever learned about that when we first got cable back in the 80s at some point. That was like on all the time. Oh. Live Australian rules football.
And the guy in the long white coat doing that.
It was like a pharmacist.
Yeah.
He had a white hat on too.
Wouldn't that be, shouldn't umpires in hot weather be dressed like pharmacists? Should we ask
it
that
would
question?
Be way too bulky to have a coat, a long coat, especially when you get into a crouch.
But a pharmacist little
what will the robot be wearing?
The robot doesn't necessarily have to be right behind home plate. The robot is just the term. It's got to be an electronic
zone
that you can tell whether or not the ball crosses into a certain area.
How quickly? Well, first of all, if you had a pharmacist behind the plate, at least you'd get some prescriptions filled.
Well, and especially if you had a migraine headache, you wouldn't have to worry about that.
Yeah. How quickly would it take before, like, Houston started, tinkering with the electronic umpire?
Probably two games, three games.
There you go.
Yeah. The first series. And speaking of Manny Ramirez, as we did in the previous segment, he had his own little pharmacist at games.
Oh, former White Sox legend, as a texter said, put some respect on that name.
And Cubs resource.
Oh, my God. He was so...
Manny being Manny.
Yeah, he was awful.
He was one of a kind.
Oh, my God. All right, 312-644-6767. Bob is in the western suburbs. Hey, Bob.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
Hey, question. I know the umpires' home plates have been awful lately. Not awful, but they've been off. Do you ever think after the game, the second base umpire, like, do they sit in the locker room like, man, you were terrible tonight? Or do you think they keep all that internal so they don't get a riff in between themselves?
You know, I think that Doug Eddings is the head of the crew.
The crew chief.
It would be difficult to have the second base umpire call him on
something. Would hope there would be. That's a really good question. I would hope there would be some sort of checks and balances.
There is, objectively.
Yeah. But I think even amongst themselves with the peers, like, okay, how did it go tonight? Well, you know, I was really struggling. And I don't know. There's something in my eye in the fourth inning. And then I started to feel a little dizzy in the fifth. I don't know. But I would hope that there would be some sort of post-game conversation about how things went rather than just ignoring the obvious. Because last night, it was impossible to ignore. And both benches, I would imagine, were giving it to the home plate umpire. And Eddings, at one point, didn't he eject somebody on Toronto?
Yes. Yeah, he did.
On the bench?
And he nearly – he told somebody else one more word.
One more, and he held up his finger. Yeah. One more, like, hey.
Say another
– okay.
I'll come over there.
And I'll –
yeah.
But I don't know if it comes from the second base umpire who has the best view of everything being missed or somebody else. I would hope that somebody in New York would have gotten on the phone with Doug Eddings afterward and said, hey, okay, one more time, and you're going to take a 10-day vacation. Or – they're not going to get suspended for bad umpiring, but I think that there should be some sort of maybe more accountability, perhaps.
Yeah.
Well,
that was, I mean, it was awful. And again, his strike zone was just awful last night, and it was awful for both teams. So it was kind of confusing as you watched it. Like, what the hell is this? Because it didn't make a ton of sense.
Right.
But having said that, you know.
Having said that, it really didn't matter, I think, for Dylan Cease. And maybe that sounds silly to say, but his stuff was so good, and he was in such command when he was on the mound that you don't want to focus too much on the umpire that takes away from what he accomplished and the step that he made. That was a career best, I think, 11 strikeouts, right?
Wow.
So
he was great.
He was
struck out the side in the first inning. You knew he was headed for a good game.
And you worried about, I mentioned this yesterday, that you wanted him to avoid the early bad inning, the kind of thing that has gotten in the way of his, you know, good starts, quality starts, if you will, before that, always that one inning. And so he was able to avoid that, got off to a good start. And the Sox, you know, he had a lead to protect. They didn't protect it. But their bullpen, the decisions were odd because I feel like, and tell me if this sounds like an excuse, you know, we're not going to make excuses for Tony La Russa here, but the injuries to the bullpen put him in a situation that was really kind of untenable last night. You have to go to young pitchers in high leverage situations, right, that really they're not equipped to handle, right, yet. Jimmy Lambert, Davis Martin, those aren't guys that typically come in out of the bullpen to face that lineup under those circumstances.
But, I mean, you've got to be able to take into account, I mean, I guess Ronaldo can go today, right? I mean,
hope so.
Graveman, were you saving him for the close? Obviously.
And obviously.
The problem with that is you're not getting to it because you're using guys in high leverage situations that aren't getting you there. And when Jimmy Lambert came in, you know, he gives up a home run. And it's that Alejandro Kirk who drives me crazy. He and Teoscar Hernandez do tons of damage to the Sox.
He drives you crazy because he's good?
Because he hits home runs
against
the White
Sox. He's a really interesting player.
He's a
fascinating
player.
He
looks more like a catcher than any catcher in the history of the game.
He's got a little Vogelback in him.
He doesn't have to even get into a crouch to be a catcher. He's that. He's like already kind of this stubby-legged little fella. Huge guy.
Huge
big
guy.
Big power.
Huge.
But
you talk about an Aussie football player. I mean,
that guy looks like he's in the wrong sport.
So that's an interesting team. And if the White Sox can end up sweeping the Blue Jays, last night felt like a playoff game because of the quality of the two teams, the quality of the two starters. It felt a little bit like a playoff game, the level of competition, the back and forth. Certainly the Sox don't have their bullpen that they might have in October. But these two teams could see each other again in the playoffs. Today, the Sox have an opportunity to sweep the Blue Jays, but you alluded to something earlier, and I don't want to necessarily let you off the hook here.
Thank you.
you mentioned a player that you don't want to jinx by saying he has not been good against the White Sox, but I think I'm going to voice it.
Don't voice it.
Because, well,
don't put the Malecki on today.
Then
voice it tomorrow.
I'll remove you from the equation. It struck me as an odd move when George Springer was pinch hit for in the eighth inning. Now, it worked out. It worked out because Biggio pinch hit for Springer, and Biggio had the single, the Tim Anderson play that we thought he might have been able to make, and Chapman scores, and it tied up the game. But in that situation, think about what happened there. George Springer. George Springer, who struck out three times,
he
I know.
Struck out three times.
But pinch hitting for him.
He was going for the golden sombrero. And they denied it.
If you're a Blue Jay lineupista.
George Springer is one of the great players in MLB. I wanted the Sox to sign him. I think he's going to have a great game today. I don't want to put a Malecki on the White Sox. I think George Springer is a marvelous human and a wonderful person. And I don't think he cheated at all.
You would have been embracing him with both hands and coming in for the big hug if he would have been signing a guy signed up with the White Sox.
I hope that nobody listening in the 5 o'clock hour feels like you have, blown the tease for tomorrow, because we have teased a really interesting fact that I will reveal tomorrow. But unfortunately, apparently, you're kind of.
No, I wanted to.
Trying to get George Springer motivated.
I'm not trying
to
motivate him, but I wanted to bring up that moment in the game because that was when I was like, all right, this is interesting because that's a kind of move that you would think would come in a high leverage situation in a big game that matters, a playoff type of a move.
He got hurt, though. Isn't that what they said on the broadcast? Or that's what a texter says. Was he hurt? It's, you know, again, when you're watching a game in the eighth inning and you're getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, sometimes you're not paying as close enough attention as you should. I hope he's hurt and doesn't play today. How's that?
Yeah, well, I think that's fair to say. If he was hurt, it's something that I missed on the broadcast, because if he was hurt, he must have strained himself flailing at Dylan Cease fastballs in the previous few at bats.
I'm told he exited the game because he was hurt.
And what was his issue, and does that mean he can't play today?
Fingers crossed.
He crossed his fingers?
No, but that he can't play today.
I gotcha.
Do you think Tim Anderson should have come up with that blooper?
Well, I mean, that's a big ask. It was
the problem. Yes,
it would have been great if he came up with it, but it would have been a big play. I mean, it was certainly understandable that he didn't, and it's not an error.
Before the game, Tony La Russa called him the best shortstop in baseball, essentially. So I guess that, Tim Anderson does so much for you offensively that, it would have been a tough catch.
We got to hit the break. I want to talk about the fire Tony chant and what that really means. Because we heard it again yesterday at one point.
Is that just the go-to voice of displeasure?
If you were there and you chanted Fire Tony, can you tell us why? I got a theory, and we'll discuss it next. 312-644-6767. Mully and Haw on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Mornings with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. So there is your Fire Tony. So we heard it again yesterday. We've heard it, and we've talked about that idea. Am I wrong in saying that Fire Tony chant has become not so much about Tony right now as maybe about Jerry? As maybe Fire Tony is a way of telling Jerry you don't like the product. And is Fire Tony a reaction to everything that's happening with the White Sox, even though they now are 500?
Well, I think we always used to connect guys like Rick and Kenny, in terms of their job and maybe the way we view them as a sort of a tandem, joined at the hip, if you will, Gar and Pax, right? Gar Pax.
Yeah.
I think that the reaction to Tony La Russa is an extension of the dissatisfaction with Jerry Reinsdorf or the frustration with his loyalty. And we have said loyal to a fault. And what happens now, I think, reflexively for White Sox fans, when things go bad, the reaction is it must be Tony's fault or there's something that the manager did. That chant, I think, cropped up after they had tied the game or blew the lead in the eighth inning. It was 3-2 after 2-0, and Dylan Cease, you know, having a no hitter through five, and all these things that looked like it was going to be one of those nights. And then the bullpen comes on, and then the lead is gone. And then I think instinctively fans react, and it's like, well, you're right. It's because of Reinsdorf. It must be the manager. Those two guys represent things that we don't like about this team. That's where it starts. Fire Tony. And I think that's the chorus you're going to get. And that is, I think, more of a reaction overall to the product and maybe to Jerry Reinsdorf than it is to anything specifically that Tony La Russa did. I don't think it was because Davis Martin replaced Jimmy Lambert that they were saying fire Tony.
Right. 312-644-6767. Let's try Kendall. Kendall's in Naperville. Hey, Kendall.
Hey, my friends. How are you? I can give you my thoughts on why. It's really kind of a buildup of things, right? So sometimes teams aren't going to hit, and sometimes teams aren't going to catch the ball, those physical things. But my standard is, if I'm capable of doing it, then the players have to be able to do it as well every single time. And just a couple of games ago, Lance Lynn not backing up the catcher gives up a base. Reynaldo not checking the runner gives up a base. Robert loafing on a single to center gives up a base. Tim getting picked off gives up a base.
Yep.
And all these things are, yes, right. And these are an indictment of the manager. It has to be. And if you're not going to be hitting, which sometimes you won't, and sometimes you're going to make errors, you can still win games if you do all the other little stuff that I'm physically capable of doing. And they're not doing it. And it's been consistent. Just the really ridiculous base running. All these non-physical errors, all mental errors. We must lead the league in it. And that's an indictment on Tony, and that's why he's got to go. That's my take.
Thanks, okay. Kendall. Yep. I think that both things can be true. I have said repeatedly, I think we both are in agreement that this White Sox team is sloppy, and they're not the smartest team in baseball. They make too many errors on the bases. They make too many errors defensively, and they're mental errors, not backing up a base, letting something go. Yeah, they're giving up too many outs and too many bases. So Tony La Russa is not doing a good job, but I do think the response is not just based on any specific thing. I do think it's a representation of the frustration collectively that everybody feels.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. And I think that when we look at this team and where they're at, it's great they got to 500. They are still 3.5 games behind the co-leaders in the division.
Yeah.
They got a lot of work to do.
The Guardians
are having a significantly better season than projected. So there's a lot of head-to-head matchups. But the Sox, they're doing okay. They won a couple games. I can't wait to see the lineup today. I'm going to look at that lineup, and I got a feeling that there will be language.
Well, okay, but let me ask you this, in fairness.
Foul language.
Because there will be language. Take a step back, and I'm not saying you necessarily. I think just generically. Take a step back, take a deep breath. This White Sox team now, after being, you know, the symbol of disappointment, one of the most disappointing teams in baseball through mid-June, has won 6 out of 8. I mean, they've won 6 out of 8, and I know you wanted to get 2 out of 3 in Houston, and the Astros are the way that we're going to measure the White Sox progress this year because of what happened in the playoffs. But a team that has won 6 out of 8 is starting to get the starting pitching rotation in line, in sync, and is getting healthier, you know, slowly but surely with positional players. There's a lot of goodwill being built up now. There's a lot of reasons for optimism if you want to look hard enough. Or you could be one bad inning away from chanting fire Tony. Which is it? And I don't know if there's much middle ground there, because I think the optimists are a little bit Pollyanna-ish. And I think the people that are pessimists are very quickly to break into the chant. Somewhere in the middle is where the White Sox are going to be this year, I think, until the playoffs. And I think that's what I think the next few weeks and next few months are going to tell.
You know, I really wonder when we hear that chant and Davis Martin is out there and you suddenly are trailing. Isn't that a reaction to his decisions on who to use in high leverage situations. And I don't think anybody is looking at it like, oh, poor Tony, he's missing this and missing that. The other thing is, we've done these metrics 1,000 times. It doesn't seem to really matter much who the manager is, but the Sox, with all you're saying, and you're right, take a step back, and they've won 6 of 8. They're 500.
Right.
That's the problem.
That is the problem.
And it doesn't make sense, even with all that's going on, that they're 500.
It seems like it took a lot to get here, too.
They were four games under.
It's been exhausting for White Sox fans to get to the point where now you are at a point where you have not lost more than you've won, but you've not won more than you've lost either. So right now, basically, you're starting from scratch. You're hitting reboot. You're starting over.
Right.
So
you lose today, and you're back in the same hole you've been in. You win today. Now you're starting to stack some wins.
Yep.
Now you got to press your advantage. This is the problem, is they've gotten to a point where they need to put together a bunch of wins.
So let's get back to the lineup. Let's look at what today you expect. Here's what I would do. Here's what I would do in light of, you know, it's very quickly a day game after a night game, but not just any night game, a 4-hour and 23-minute game that if you stayed up until 11:35, as unfortunately I did, here and there, I dozed off. And,
yeah, I know.
You know how that goes.
That's how you watch it.
But anyway, I digress. I would take Tim Anderson and I would DH him today. I would play Danny Mendick at shortstop. I would play Jake Berger at third base. And I would say, Josh Harrison, I'm riding the hot hand. I know you're 34 and you might be sleepy, but put that black uniform on and go out there at second base and give us another, you know, great effort the way that you've been playing lately. And I would say the same thing to Jose Abreu, and I would play my outfield the way that you got a right-hander on the mound for the Blue Jays. So I wouldn't change much, Mully, because I think you're in a position now. Go for the sweep. Don't concede anything. It's not Sunday, Tony. It's Wednesday. So you've got an opportunity to sweep a very good team because you've got a very bad team coming into town after them. Take advantage. And so put Tim Anderson, give him a little bit of a rest. He can DH, but don't get crazy with your lineup.
Yeah, I'm worried about that last element that you just said. I just think that it's going to be really interesting to see who is rolled out and in what order and how the batting, how he lines them up. I think that there are guys that you have to have on this team and guys that have to play, and I'm not sure that Tony's going to agree with me. And if you're going to play Tim Anderson as a DH and lead him off, I mean, why not play him as shortstop?
Give him some rest.
Well,
the rest is legs. You don't want him on his feet.
Run into first.
Well, no,
circling the bases.
Running back to first.
You know,
that's exhausting.
Adam Engel was on base a lot yesterday.
Yeah, he was.
And he stole a couple bases yesterday.
And he had 3 hits.
And he had 3 hits.
So play him in right field.
Well,
I know what you're worried about. You're worried about seeing Haseley in the lineup.
Well, and I'm not worried about it, but I think that's what we're going to see. I think it's because of the handedness, and I think we'll see that.
Yeah, Ross Stripling is on the mound for the Blue Jays. Right. I don't think you need to see Adam Haseley, even though I expect you're probably right. But I do think there's a difference between DHing and playing shortstop, because Tim last night, he was pretty active at shortstop. He had a lot of plays, and I think that you could give him a mental break, if anything, and just let him worry about hitting, because you know he's going to hit. And when he is at the top of the lineup, I think that you have seen how different the lineup is.
So, you know, it's a very small sample size, the White Sox against Ross Stripling, but Adam Haseley is 1-for-2 against him, which is as good as anybody on the team. The only other guy would be A.J. Pollock, has 2 hits against him, but that's an 11 at-bats.
Oh, this brings us back to Tony, okay? Because this is what drives me a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
Is that one day we will hear, we're not here, but we can infer a lot about, well, they're going to embrace the analytics that tell us certain things that justify decisions that don't make sense outside of the dugout. So the analytics suddenly matter on one day. And then the next, everything is observational analytics or going by the gut or things that don't necessarily add up. And why would you bet somebody hitting 161 in the 3-hole? I don't know. But one day they matter and the next day they don't. That's what drives me crazy. It makes me want to sit there when I'm watching saying, fire Tony. But those analytics today, yeah, Based on what you just told me, the two at-bats that Adam Haseley has had against Ross Stripling, I think will get him in the lineup today. In right field.
Alejandro Kirk is the guy you should walk with a 1-2 count in this game.
Yeah. Why?
Because he's good against Giolito.
Yes. How many home runs?
2 home runs against Giolito at 6 at-bats, 4 RBI.
Yeah, I would walk him.
Walk him, Tony.
I would definitely walk him. And by the way,
and I'm joking,
only after you get 2 strikes out of him.
That's right. That's right.
So the Toronto Blue Jays apparently did 9 hours ago tweet out the fact that George Springer was removed for elbow discomfort.
Excellent. It just in terms of tonight, I want him to have elbow discomfort. Then I can badmouth him all day tomorrow. We have a texter checked in and said that they took him out of the game because they couldn't find a garbage can to bang on.
I like that.
Yeah.
You never forget.
No.
Never forget.
Only the national broadcast forgets.
That's right.
Tell that to Altuve.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, boy. Poor Altuve. 312-644-6767 is the number. We've got Joe Ostrowski joining us next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Mully and Haw.
Man, you guys are awesome. I've been listening to you guys for years.
On 670 the Score.
Money, 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 money.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 the Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend Joe Ostrowski. He does a magnificent job, and he joins us now on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Joe, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Well, I'm
pretty good.
I'm daydreaming about Circa Resort and Casino, to be honest with you.
Oh, man.
That's just how I roll.
I was thinking about that actually yesterday. When am I going to head out to Vegas to sign up for the contest before the football season gets rolling? Because it's going to be here before we know it.
So let's talk about that for a second. Anything change with the Bulls or the Bears in any way? I mean, every time you turn around, there's like a guard going down or there's a player signing who might have been here. It just seems like I've never heard anything positive about the Bears in the offseason.
Right. One thing that we've brought up that's had some momentum that people have possibly missed out on is the slight adjustments we've seen with the division odds. And let's say the betting market thinks the Lions are going to be better than the Bears.
Wow.
Okay, so now it's about across the board. The Bears are the long shot for the NFC North. Now, I don't think anybody thought they really had a chance, but when the Lions just keep getting a lot of steam. People are talking them up for over on the win total, possibly a long shot for the division. How are the Packers going to look without Devontae Adams? How that whole thing's going to work with Rodgers this year? It's like there's just a lot of buzz around the Vikings and the Lions, and people are sick of betting on the Packers, and they don't want to lay -175 to win the division. They want Rodgers to lose anyways. And the view is that the Bears are tanking overall. So, yeah, nothing there. The odds for the NFC North keep getting longer. And even though they have such an easy schedule this year, I'm only hearing Bears under on the win total. I haven't heard anybody say, listen, you've got to go and hammer this number on Bears over victories.
Joe, the NBA draft tomorrow night, I have 2 questions. I have 2 areas and 2 things that I would want to bet on if I were betting on the draft. Number one, who's going first overall? I don't know what the Magic are thinking necessarily. They've been pretty good about keeping their intentions close to the vest. The other thing is who the Bulls would take at 18 if, in fact, they keep that pick.
Yeah, I don't think anybody knows what the Magic are doing, and they've done a pretty good job here. The betting markets over the last couple of days, this reminds me of Trayvon Walker. What we saw in that final week leading up to the draft, just wild movement. 2 days ago, Paolo Banchero was 20-1 to be the number one overall pick. Right now, he's 2-1. From 20-1 all the way down to 2-1. There's a lot of smoke there. But if you look at a lot of the top mock drafts out there, nobody is mocking that. Now Woj put that out there last night that it could be a possibility, and then the market crashed even more. So it's really up for grabs. I mean, for weeks and weeks, it was about, okay, Jabari's going to go number one overall. He was -500 at one point, and now it's almost even money. So if you're following where the money is going, where some of the sharp money was at a big number for Banchero to go number one overall, and the people following that, there is a lot of momentum here. But Jabari is still the favorite to go number one overall. So that's the way I would lean, but there's a lot of rumors that their meeting didn't go that all that great, and that's the reason. And also with Chet Holmgren, that's going to be that might be the biggest story of the night. Why is he holding out on all of these medicals with certain teams? Is he hiding something? Now, a lot of the reports, they suggested that it's because he wants to pick his landing spot. But it's happening with multiple teams, and there have been a lot of rumors out there for a number of months about his long-term health. So it wouldn't surprise me if there's a slide on Chet Holmgren. And what you can do is, let's say you think Ivy can jump up there into the top three, and it's not going to be the three bigs. You can go with Chet Holmgren. Number four is 36-1. Ugh. Number five is 60-1. So that's going to be intriguing for me. And as far as the Bulls selection, there are odds out there on what they're going to do. Looking at the latest mock drafts that were posted yesterday, some of the more respected ones, Sam Vecenie, he gave Mark Williams, the 7-footer out of Duke, to the Bulls. He is 8-1 to be the Bulls' first selection. Jonathan Givony, Malachi Branham out of Ohio State, he's 10-1. I've also seen Tari Eason out of LSU, 6-1. And Abaji, he seems to be taking a bit of a free fall. That's one of the overs that I do like. I did see a mock draft put him to the Bulls. You could find him at 10-1. So we've seen a lot of movement. I expect a lot more by the time we get to tomorrow night's draft.
Okay, so I just am curious. We're waiting for the big trade or for anything to happen. Are there any odds out there other than the draft odds? Do we know if the Bulls are going to be a better team because they're going to make some blockbuster? Is anybody trying to wager on that before it happens? Do we think they're sitting pat and nobody's going to jump on that number? I mean, they're not moving at all until they do something, right?
Yeah, Jalen Williams is a favorite there. He's 5-1 to go number 18. Okay. I just have a tough time with that one because, okay, I think we have a pretty solid idea. The three bigs, top couple of guards, they're going to go probably top five or six in some order. I think we have a decent idea there. Then this whole thing seems to be wide open. So now not only are you projecting what the Bulls are looking for, which the reports are all over the place, that they're looking at a center. Of course, they're looking at guard. So who knows what they're going to do? Best player available. What's best player available? If you've been tracking this over the last couple of months, some of the reports from scouts out there is, okay, a player has this guy number 12 overall. You talk to the next team down the line, yeah, second rounder. The opinions are all over the map. So trying to pick what the Bulls are going to do at number 18 overall, or if they were to move up, that's really tough because this thing could go haywire right after we get out of those top five, top six selections.
Quickly, Joe, what's going on with the Cup Final? The Lightning answered, but this series seems to be going, the home ice is creating such an advantage for teams. They look faster on their home ice.
Yeah, you see the advantage there with the last change. Another pick'em situation tonight. That's what we saw on Monday. Monday seemed pretty easy, right, David? Because yep. You've got the team with the pedigree. They're down 0-2 going home. Vasilevsky allows three goals in the first period a couple of times. So far in the series, overs are 3-0. First period overs are also 3-0. That number is always sitting there at 1.5. Now, Tampa, great at home, 8-1 in this playoffs. They're on a 14-1 run in the playoffs at home. But I'm going to roll with Colorado tonight. If you're looking at some props, Mikko has 7 assists in the series in 3 games. You could bet over a half assist at -130. And Victor Hedman of Tampa Bay, he's got 8 shots on goal, second highest on the team. Good value there to score a goal at +310.
Joe, you're the best. We appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, Joe. Go Lightning.
Thanks, guys.
This segment with Joe Ostrowski brought to you by PointsBet. 312-644-6767. That's the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.